The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Thank you so much for hanging out with me for this 42 to 43 minutes of talk time. If you're a podcaster, if you're a radio show junkie, then you are spending an hour with me on this Thursday night or Saturday morning, whichever one you choose to pick. We'll have Rod on in just a few minutes. Obviously, the year has started off on a rough patch here, both with the NASDAQ and the S&P. We're going to get Rod's opinion of that. Of course, it's all Fed-driven. And what is the Fed saying? And is there anything that you should be thinking about or doing as we move into this new year of 2022? Let's do a little news of the week brought to you by Kenny Bland Auctions. They are your full-service auction service. They offer the pre-planning, the sale of your estate or real estate. They have continuous auctions going on, so go visit them at KennyBlandAuctions.com. And like Law Group, give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Should be a good 2022 New Year's resolution to either do it or update it. Call Lance at the Like Law Group, 812-323-8300. And finally, Unrivaled Electric. They are your full-service electrical contractor. They specialize in generators and solar arrays. Veteran-owned, Unrivaled Electric wants to be your electrician. Give them a call at 812-361-3604. That's Unrivaled Electric. All right. Now, we always talk about time in the market, right? Well, in fact, if you go back just for three-year rolling periods, all the way back to 1926, 84% of the three-year rolling period, so it's not 3 years, 3 years, 3 years, it's 3 years rolling, like this year plus two more, and then next year plus two more, we've actually seen it go up again 84% of the time. So you have to stay in. We're in year two of President Biden's four-year term, and when you look at the market, the S&P has been positive 15 of the last 24 presidential second years. So, you know, not great, but not bad either. And the average performance during the last 24 second-year presidential terms, if that makes any sense, the gain is just, and I hate to use this word just, but you have to keep your expectations reasonable, 6.7%. U.S. employers added 6.45 million new jobs in 2021. That's an average of 537,000 new jobs created each month. The smallest gain was actually in December of 2021 when we added just 199,000 new jobs. Now, power to the worker. Here we go, right? Wages are up. Average hourly earnings of employees in the private sector rose by 4.7% in 2021. On top of the 5.5% gain in 2020. So that is a good big chunk, right, of raises. We just gave raises at our office 6%. So pat us on the back, right? But I'll tell you what, our folks are good people, smart people, work really hard and are committed and dedicated. And, you know, you got to share the love. If you don't, something wrong with you. One out of every six workers surveyed, though, in 2021, December, believed they received pay raises that did not allow them to stay up with inflation. Rush to buy. We had over $1.61 trillion of new borrowed money from mortgage lenders in 2021. That is an absolute record. That did not include refinancing your mortgages and pulling some cash out. There were actually 1.53 million homes for sale nationwide back in 2018. 3 years later, there's only 1.11 million homes for sale. So you have low interest rates, less inventory, that creates high prices. Americans bought 15 million new cars in 2021, down from 17 million in the pre-pandemic 2019. Of course, the automakers blame the semiconductor chip shortage as the key reason behind it. And I would agree with that. My car was coming off lease at the end of December, and we're not going to get into whether you should lease or buy on the program right now. It always depends, but it came off lease, and I'm like, I have nothing to buy, nothing to, you know, drive, so I'm just going to extend my lease for another few months and see if the shortage of vehicles actually loosens up a little bit. You know, I actually did a podcast this week on different ways that taxes could be created, revenue for the U.S. government, besides just raising income taxes. But I will say this, I spent some time on the estate tax. Well, right now, the maximum amount that a deceased individual may pass to their heirs, federally tax-free, estate tax-free, with proper planning, of course, rose to $12.06 million in 2022, up from $11.7 million in 2021. Well, keep in mind that this is another thing that 2025, the final drive addresses, that the federal estate tax will go back to where it was pre-tax cuts and will be cut in half. So that 12 will go to 6, and Lord knows what happens from there. And speaking of safe money, from January 1 of 2020 through January 5th of this year, the size of the money market fund industry in the U.S. rose from $3.6 trillion to $4.7 trillion, and that's with really getting paid nothing. So people are in a very strong cash position right now, and why would you not? Wages were up, investments were up, spending went way down. So what happens with all the moolah, right? It gets shoved into the bank and into money market funds. All right, let's come back with Rod here in just a few minutes to talk about how we got off to a little bit of a rough start this year, and if there's anything that you should be thinking about or doing when it comes to your own 401ks and IRAs and your own investment plan. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. You know, stocks were under pressure all week last week as it grappled with higher bond yields and the talk of possibly 4 rate hikes this year, not the couple that we've heard about in the past. Initially, intraday declines would bring out buyers and kind of pair up the losses. But then we're a little heartened by the Fed Chair Powell's congressional testimony on Tuesday. This is last week. That softened the hawkish tone in the minutes from the minutes of the Federal Open Market Committee. So then after digesting that hot inflation report that was released last week, stocks were still unable to resist the selling pressures on Thursday, a weak retail sales number, a resumption in the rising yields, and mixed earnings from some of the big money center banks weighed on the market last week. And we kind of got started off this week on the same foot. Rod, here we sit today. I see on Thursday, the market, when we're recording this program, as you're getting ready to head to Florida, and I have a program on Thursday night, Taxes and Retirement 2025, the final drive. Tonight, we are pre-recording this show, but it seems to be all about what the Fed has to say and whether or not these inflation numbers are going to stick or calm down. I know we talked this morning at great length about the condition of the market, what's driving the market, and then in a little bit I want to talk about what are some things folks should be considering, especially when it comes to the most vulnerable spot in the investment world, which is fixed income. But what is going on, Rod, not just in the past week, but leading up to this week, and what's the sentiment, the attitude, and the direction of where things are going?
Yeah, I think one key important thing to always acknowledge when you start off and have some weakness like we've had so far in January since the calendar flipped is we are still on the S&P 500 through yesterday's close of business, only down about 4.9%, so just a tick under 5. We set a new all-time high right near the end of December, so even off of the new all-time high, maybe you're a little bit over 5, maybe 5.25% roughly down on the S&P 500. So you still haven't had that so-called correction number of 10% down, not the S&P and the Dow Jones. Dow Jones actually has fared slightly better with a year-to-date negative of about 3.6%. It set a new all-time high around the same time at the end of the year in the S&P 500. Now, the tech-heavy NASDAQ has most certainly been far weaker. It's down over 8% so far year to date. Its all-time high was actually set back in November. So it has breached that magic 10% correction level on its side. So I think there's a combination of things going on here. One, as we start to head into rising interest rates, all you continue to hear the talking heads on TV on the business channels talk about is how negative rising rates are to growth stocks in the technology. So I think you've got some jockeying going around as far as some reallocating dollars from the growthier sectors into the more value and reopening of the economy, cyclical type sectors. That's part of it. Then secondarily, I think that the market is trying to struggle with what it deems the Fed's actions are going to be, and most importantly, at what pace are those actions going to be. I think now we have all come to the conclusion, while many of us were already there prior to the Fed getting there, that this inflation is not transitory, or at least not 100% of it is not transitory. We have seen some levels come down, but still not to the degree to where you can say, okay, we do not have inflation issues. If they do not begin to resolve themselves on their own and the Fed is forced to be more aggressive, the market's not going to like that. Now, I have argued for a while that the market shouldn't be fearful of some rate increases. We're setting at zero with federal funds rate. You go to 0.25, you go to 0.5, 0.7, they're still extremely low interest rates, and I don't believe those levels would be highly restrictive to growth companies. But I understand that psychology sometimes outweighs fundamental reaction. So right now, psychology is, hey, growth stocks, rising interest rates, not a good environment, so you get out. Now, on today's rally is pretty broad-based. It's all the way across the board. But, of course, tech may be starting to get to that level to where they say, hey, you know what? We've got a pretty decent valuation reset here, and at these new values for some of these companies, even though interest rates are going to go up, this may be a spot to start dipping our toes back into the water into some of those sectors.
You know, I was sitting here taking a drink of water, of course. When you stopped, you would think I would know by now not to do that. We mentioned the rates going up. And I think the one thing I've been trying to get across to people is that if you're still working and you still have, you know, 8, 9, 10 years out, I'd be a little cautious of having much bond exposure in my 401k. Because if rates do go up, and they already have, your bond values will go down. And all of you sitting in 401ks and mutual funds, those are perpetual funds. So there's no maturity date. Now, if you own bonds with a fixed maturity date and fixed interest rate, certainly you're not immune to the value going down, but at least you have a bailout date where you know it will mature. So, Rod, I've met with someone 54 yesterday. He said, hey, will you take a look at my 401k? I'm like, sure. He had a target date like 2030 in there as a retirement target date fund. We looked at the allocation. It's about 30% fixed income. I'm like, you know, I would probably start to shift this out. So we started moving money around and put it into value and put it into more equity-driven investments. But I don't think people have, you know, we haven't experienced any real declines for so long that, just like everything else, as human beings, we have that recency sort of mentality. And when they see markets go down, bonds or stocks, they get a little shocked. And I've already had a few people say, man, I looked at my 401k and it was down $30,000. I'm like, well, first of all, congratulations that you are only down $30,000 because, you know, the market was down, like you said, nearly 5 on the S&P. And that might have represented, you know, maybe 3% in your 401k. But still, the real numbers does shock people. So two things there. Bonds, rising rates, vulnerability there, and then obviously the reality of the fact that we haven't had much volatility at all in the last handful of years, and all we've seen is up. In fact, we set more record highs last year than any other time in history.
Yeah, most certainly. So on the fixed income side, I think first and foremost, it's extremely important to know and understand why you should own fixed income in the environment that you just laid out there, Doug. And there's two reasons for it. One, income, not getting a lot of it, but it is generating income and it's contractual. And we're talking, and I'm talking right now, individual bonds, not bond funds, but individual bonds. And secondarily, principal protection. You know that as long as the entity backing the bond is still up and running, so credit quality being important, at maturity of that bond, you know exactly what the principal payment will be to you at that point in time. So there is a good reason to own bonds in this environment, which isn't the best environment for fixed income. But to the point that you're making, Dave, in regards to the fact that if you don't need income today and you're not as concerned about principal protection in the current environment that you're in, that yeah, there are some other avenues out there that you can potentially go and earn some more money than what you're getting in the fixed income world. They don't come with principal protection necessarily, but they do offer some opportunities. I think the other thing to keep in mind on the fixed income, and something we've tried to do with a lot of our clients, is park some of those dollars in ultra short or short duration funds or short ladders, meaning that each year we've got a tranche of bonds that are maturing, that as interest rates begin to rise, we can go back in and buy at the back end of that ladder, hopefully at higher interest rates as these interest rates begin to go up. So don't lock yourself into low interest rates that maturities are way out into the future. And as rates start to rise, your bond value drops. And you're like, well, gosh, I hate to take the loss just to get a little bit more income. So put yourself in a position where you've got some dollars every year that you can do that type of work with as interest rates are rising. The bond mutual funds, for some people, it's still the best avenue to go due to lack of enough wealth accumulation to get proper diversification. But one of the negatives to be aware, other people's actions can impact how it works for you. And what I mean by that, if other people are bailing and selling out of the bond mutual fund, the impact it has on that fund can be felt by you, even though you're not a seller. So if you get mass selling in the bond world, what typically ends up happening with those bond mutual funds, as the appetite to buy lessens, they're forced to sell their higher quality stuff to get people to buy for more liquidation. So then they're stuck holding a less than favorable portfolio. Now, when I say less than favorable, I understand if it's an investment grade fund, they can't go out and buy a whole bunch of below investment grade bonds that you're stuck ending up holding, but you're going to own the lower side of the investment grade component within that as opposed to the higher credit quality side when you get that mass type of selling within the bond world. So that's the one thing that we just caution people and want to make them aware of, that if they go to say, hey, I'm going to bank all these profits that I made last year on the equity side and I want to throw it into fixed income to protect my principal, it's best to be done if you can do it in an individual bond versus a bond fund, to where you're not in complete and total control of how that bond fund manages moving forward, because it is subject to potential redemption risk from other investors in that same fund. Once again, as we say, we're not bashing bond mutual funds that they shouldn't be used, but when you have the capabilities to do something else, sometimes there is a good reason to use other products in that same area.
You know, I was thinking about, as I'm preparing for tonight, how to explain when interest rates go up, why sometimes stocks will go down. And I remember back in my Charles J. Gibbons days, which is my story of a Greenville College student and football player returning to Indiana University, and someone said, they were asked the question in this room, so I would have technically been like a sophomore, I believe, and when rates go up, you know, why do stocks sometimes go down? I raised my hand up, you know, very aggressively and said, because there is an investor decision line. And once that investor decision line is crossed, where they are okay taking a higher interest rate on fixed income than they are taking the risk in equities, then you have equities fall. And everyone's head turned around and looked at me and like, who is this guy? But I've been studying this stuff for a very, very long time. And then I went to put my coat on, stuck my hand through my sleeve, and it got stuck. And when I pushed it through, I mistakenly punched someone right in the side of the head. So that's my story about how I explained it back then, but the story is still true now. Rod, I'll let you go. I know you got a lot to do before you take off for Florida. So enjoy the sunshine, because I doubt I'll get to see you by the time I get back, and we'll connect again next week.
That sounds good, Dave. You have a great rest of the show, and I will talk to you next week.
All right. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's see. Okay, so I had this on the topic for last week's show, and it was just too much, so I decided to boot it. But it's a very interesting way to look at the tax code and the uneven strides that it's had against inflation. And this is where we've had wages go up and why tax revenues would go up, but not just because of the fact that there's more income, but some of the metrics for which we have taxes, whether it's brackets or other things, haven't kept up with these increases. So it's pretty interesting, and I'll dig into it a little bit here. A good article in the Wall Street Journal about it, and that's what prompted my thinking about a week ago. So when we come back, the tax code's uneven strides against inflation. This is Your Money with David Hayes. I think I did a terrible job trying to tee up this next segment, but you know, that's what we get when we don't script things out. It's all just bullet points and ideas that pop into my head randomly. But inflation is back, and that matters for your taxes. In November, the inflation number was up 6.8%, a four-decade high. For new cars, I think it was up 11%. Fast food restaurants up nearly 8%. The jump in prices was the largest on record. Now, higher inflation is more uneven in its impact on taxes owed to Uncle Sam. Because of the differences in inflation adjustments, taxpayers this year will feel inflation's impact more than others. Inflation indexing was enacted in 1981, and this was after years of inflation as high as like almost 15%. While taxpayers' income rose with inflation, tax brackets remained fixed. As a result, people owed higher taxes due to nominal, not real, increases in income. So responding to these pressures, Congress indexed the income tax brackets for inflation, but they didn't index all of the tax provisions, and they've since chosen to adjust just a few here and there, new ones for inflation, but not other. Here's an example. There is a $750,000 cap on the mortgage debt for which you can deduct the interest. That was enacted back in 2017. And an exception on $250,000 of profit for single people and $500,000 of profit for married couples. That was enacted in 1997. So think about that. All of these houses have gone up in value, right? But the amount of mortgage debt that you can deduct is still the same, $750,000, as it was in 2017. And the profit that you make on a personal residence has been pegged since 1997. It's crazy. So if lawmakers had adjusted the home seller's exemption for inflation, it would now be almost $822,000 for married people instead of $500,000. So if a taxpayer has a large taxable gain from the sale of a highly appreciated home, that person's going to owe higher taxes due to inflation than a wage earner would if they were just making it through a job, because the tax brackets typically have been indexed forward, but some of these others have not. Some other notable provisions not indexed for inflation include the cap on state and local tax deductions. It's now $10,000 per return, and the $3,000 deduction of net capital losses against ordinary income. So if you go out and have $10,000 loss, long-term loss, and you have no gains to offset that, you can take $3,000 a year of that. So it'd be three, and then three next year, and three the next year, and then one the following year against ordinary income. That has been the same forever. I mean, as long as I can remember. Another thing that has been pegged is the threshold for the 3.8% surtax on net investment income. That was pegged back during the Obamacare thing. This was to pay for the Affordable Health Care Act. That was pegged at $250,000 of income for married people and $200,000 for singles. That has never changed. Now, what about retirement accounts? Many people contributing to their 401ks and IRAs and Roth IRAs for 2022 will benefit from the inflation adjustments that are higher, but not that much. A 401k for savers under 50 will go up from $19,500 to $20,500. So that's about 5%. So that's close. For contributions to traditional Roth IRAs, the limit will stay the same at $6,000 for now, not indexed forward. That's kind of crazy. Here's another one that is pretty darn interesting. Social Security. I'm going to be talking about that tonight. Higher inflation certainly will boost your Social Security, by 5.9% for this coming year? That's the most since 1982. But higher inflation also raises taxes for most people. The income thresholds, this has been set since 1994. This is 1994 numbers that you will pay up to 85% of your benefit you'll pay taxes on. But those limits have never been adjusted. So they're still sitting at $44,000 for joint filers and $34,000 for singles. So in other words, once you go over that threshold of $44,000, then up to 85% of your benefits taxable. So if, with all this Social Security income, almost everybody pays at 85%. Not everybody, but almost everybody. If the thresholds were to have been adjusted for inflation, there would be about $80,000 for couples and $62,000 for singles. So my point is that there are ways to raise revenue without raising taxes. So you just cap these limits, cap the deductibility of this or that. And we have 64 million people currently receiving Social Security payments. With the payments are taxable on well over half of those people. If we would have been indexed for inflation, then we would have like a quarter of the people that would it would actually affect, and they would pay taxes. So that's my point, right? And then finally, long-term capital gains and dividends are indexed kind of similar to brackets for ordinary income, but it doesn't deal with all of the inflation pressures. Now, there's a couple of examples, but it's so complicated, I'm not going to get into it. But there are ways that we can raise revenues without actually raising taxes, and things that you should be keeping your eye on. And then again, what better solution, right, to all of these issues than to have most of your money in tax-free dollars as you roar into your retirement years. And of course, that is the good old-fashioned Roth and other things as well. And I have put four podcasts in the can. We're going to be launching, I believe, next Monday. Be a big promotion. I'm not sure, email, if you're on our email list, probably Facebook, all that kind of stuff. And we're getting out there. So tonight is my first time, really, in a long, long time, of being in front of a live group of people and presenting on the topic of taxes in retirement 2025, the final drive, what you need to know to win. And I'm super excited about it. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion, especially looking at David McKnight's podcast this past week. And it was, if I have the title here, Joe Manchin is coming back to the table on Build Back Better. That's the question mark. I'll be back in just a minute to talk about that and more. It's Your Money with David Hayes. I'm looking at all the tax rates and things. I have a really cool financial planning limits and tax rate schedules, about a four-pager. Very, very helpful. But I was kind of just looking at things and looking at the increases for your standard deductions. In 2020, for married filing jointly, it was $24,800. Now in 2022, it's $25,900. Probably not completely keeping up with inflation there. Just all kinds of things that are stuck in the mud, or maybe not keeping up with the fact that we are forced to take out more money from our retirement accounts, or we're making more money at work, or whatever it might be. But I'm just flipping through now and looking at all of this, and it's really kind of interesting, especially on go back to the federal estate tax. And I have a segment on that in my podcast that I put out, that it will be out probably in the next couple of weeks, on the history of the federal estate tax. It's kind of interesting going back to 1994 when I started in this industry to where we are today and the roller coaster ride that we have been on. One of the things that we talked about, oh, I don't know, maybe it was last year, that obviously 2025, the final drive, that was all premised around the fact that when the tax cuts came into effect in 2018, that they would stay in place until the beginning of 2026, or basically the end of 2025. And they would sunset, and then everything would return back to where it was before at a minimum. Well, there was a lot of talk about potentially extending some of these tax brackets, like in the 12, 22, maybe 24, for an additional period of time, like another 5 years. And that was one of the ploys that was being used to try and lure Joe, to the table to try and pass this Build Back Better plan. And finally, and that would have been good news for all of us that are trying to move money from taxable to tax-free, giving us more time to do that, spread it out over a longer period of time. Bad news probably for the fiscal health of our country going forward. But we did. I did see a final nail in the coffin, I believe, with a Yahoo article that basically said, no, I'm no longer interested. Quit asking me about this. It's over. It's done. So I'm telling you right now that this is probably dead. So we need to get to it and get after it and continue to be laser focused on making the right decision about taking money from taxable tax-free. And I'm telling you that I already mentioned last week, but I can't assume you listen every week. Why it's so important to do it early in the year, especially if you're trying to do your 401k, go into your 401k and say, okay, and plus now you may have your W-2 as well, so you really have a good idea of what your earnings are, where you are in the tax brackets. Remember, we're in a marginal system. You have 0, 10, 12, 22, 24, next dollar. So if you move into 24, no, it doesn't increase taxes across the board. It's simply on that next dollar. So figure out where you fall. How much more income can you recognize? Do a Roth conversion, in-plan Roth conversion if you want, if it's available to you. Recognize the income, and then immediately go to your HR or however you adjust your withholdings and just say, hey, would you withhold an extra, whatever, $500 a paycheck to pay for that conversion? And maybe many of you will never even miss that. I know some of you listening like, man, I can't. Well, it's like everyone's different, right? But the idea is that you're early in the year and you could do this over a longer period of time, now over practically 11 more months. So I probably won't talk about that much more after maybe March or April, but I think it's a great idea. It's a fantastic idea. And I also spent time on my podcast that I just recorded a couple days ago that will be out in a few weeks on all of these other ways tax revenues can be generated. I didn't go into specifics on how the tax code and its uneven strides against inflation, but I'm saving this article, and I will do a piece on that at some point. But I also reached out to Jeffrey Levine, who is a really well-known guy in our world, on how budgets are created. Because when we look back at 2017, they said, okay, yeah, we're going to lower taxes, but here's how we're going to pay for it. That was budget reconciliation. You're hearing the same stuff now. We're going to do all this, but here's how we're going to pay for it. And we have, as Americans, continued to say, okay, we're going to make a 10-year plan, and here's how we're going to pay for it. So what we've done consistently is said, okay, we're going to pull forward income. And it could be in a variety of ways that I've mentioned before in the podcast. How do we pull forward more income? How do we push out expenses? Well, that's just kicking the can down the road. That's how we got $30 trillion in debt, because we've made these silly budget thing and promises and projections for all of these years, and we're still doing it today. So I am excited about the podcast. I'm hoping that I'll continue to have interest doing it. Because, I built a room around it. So if I don't do it, then I have like this really cool looking room that has equipment in it that's not being used. So anyway, I do still have the neon sign on the wall that says, because I know things. And I get a kick out of it every time I look at it. And I showed someone the podcast room this week, and I'm like, hey, what do you think about that sign? And they start laughing, and I go, yeah, is that a little bit pretentious, to say, because I know things, you should listen? And he's like, no, I kind of like it. So, and it's not so much because I know things, but it's because the people that come on, they're going to know things as well. Not that I don't know a few things. All right, let's take a break. Let's see where we are on things. Yeah, when we come back, I was actually on a meeting this week for the BEDC, and there was a lot of talk about demographics and the changing demographics and early out retirements and how the labor market's so tight. I'm just going to kind of go through a couple things that I found interesting in that conversation. We'll be back to Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Yeah, we had the Bloomington Economic Development Corporation meeting this week, and it was via Zoom, which, I've been okay doing, especially when it's cold outside. I don't care to get together in big groups. It does not bother me at all. In fact, when people say, yeah, people still aren't comfortable getting together, I'm like, only a few people aren't comfortable getting together, and that's their right, whatever they want to do, but quit forcing it upon me. And I'm like, have you not been to a basketball game? Have you not watched any football on TV with 70,000 people crammed into the stadium? Have you not flown on an airplane and saw how packed the airplanes are? Well, people are fine getting out. But anyway, we're doing them Zoom anyway, and they know that I'm kind of a griper when it comes to that. But it's cold outside, and I'm fine not having to look for parking and getting out of the car and all that stuff. So I'm happy sitting in my office and looking forward to a good Mexican dinner afterwards, which is what I did. So anyway, I was just interested because they had Steve Dawson, a good friend of mine, HFI owner. They had Cullen, who owns Smithville. I guess Smithville Telephone, but it's like not that anymore. It's more high-tech name. Dan Peterson from Cook, and just really talking about, you know, the challenges that they have, the outlook for things in the area. But the one thing that kept coming up was demographics. You know, that we have an aging population, let's just face it. You know, the baby boom generation peaked out birth rates around 1961, so guess where they all are? They're approaching or already in retirement. My dad's 74. He is literally one of the very earliest baby boomers. And then we still have, you know, millions of them still working. I'm not a boomer. I am just behind that. I call it an echo boom, but I'm not in that generation. But they are retiring. And then there wasn't enough people to fill in the gaps below. Steve said they had like 400 employees, and half of them have been there less than 5 years. So it's a very difficult market to be in. The other thing was the hassle factor. You know, when you have people that are in their late 50s, early 60s, and all of a sudden it's just a hassle to do what you're doing. Teaching is one. You know, they're like, I'm out. You know, if I can get out and have a pension, have some Social Security, I'm fine. I'm out. We've had so many retirees like that. We've had early out offers from different employers around to say, hey, here's an opportunity for you to leave early. We'll do this. We'll do that. Well, guess what? If you're looking at that and you're thinking of all the stuff I have to put up with to even go to work, then yeah, I'll take the deal and I get out. Well, they didn't anticipate the issues of trying to find new people. They're just not there. And if you think about it, the challenges they talked about, daycare. You know, daycare is scarce. It's hard to find anywhere to take your kids. And if you do, it's darn expensive. And in fact, it doesn't make sense financially for a lot of moms or dads or whoever to say, yeah, I'm going to leave my kid with you so that I can go out and make some money. But after I pay you, I barely, you know, bring anything home. Why would you do that? You'd just stay at home. Housing is another one, right? That was another big challenge. We're trying to force workforce housing into areas that just don't want it. Bloomington doesn't want it. They say they do, but they don't. But that, guess what? What I loved about that meeting was they were talking about Owen County. They were talking about Lawrence County, Orange County, how they were all super excited and helpful in helping them create this workforce housing. But yet, you know, Bloomington, they didn't say it out loud because everyone wants to be PC in those meetings. But yeah, I mean, that was literally putting Monroe County in the crosshairs to say, obviously, you don't want it. And you, if you're in that world, you're probably saying amen to that. But those are challenges, and that's been hard then for people like at Cook or people like at HFI or people at Smithville and all over the place. We're trying to hire someone. So if you want a job and you love working with, you know, high-energy people and it's in a fun environment and it's an administrative type role, please put your application in. Give us a call because we are dying to hire a new person. So we're in the same boat as everybody else. Are there solutions? Yeah, there's solutions, and they mentioned a few of them on there. But you have this pull, push and pull. You have demographics, right? People going out of the workforce. What will lure them back into the workforce? I don't have a clue. How do we get people to take jobs whenever daycare is so expensive, or they don't even live within 30 miles of where the job is for them? I mean, there's just so many challenges, but it's not going away. Not going away. It's going to be here for a bit. That's why from the very beginning, if you're listening to me, all this stuff about transitory inflation, I'm like, guys, this is not transitory. I've said, when wages are your number one expense as an employer, and it is, that is not going away. It's not going away. When you have supply chain issues, it's not going away. And that's not getting much better. Buddy of mine, I don't go to Kroger very often because I just don't like the hassle of going into the grocery store. But he said, the shelves are sparse in there. I'm like, really? He goes, yeah, and I don't know why. Well, you know, I don't know why either, except that there's issues out there. And that stuff's not going away. And that's what Rod and I have talked about a great deal behind closed doors is what if anything, will spill over and cause us to get a little bit derailed. Well, when you have, you know, what was, I tell you, millions and millions of new cars that were not sold because of, what, down 17 million purchases from 2019, that's real spending right there. I mean, and that is true throughout. When you look at homes, when interest rates go up, right, that's going to cause home values to come down, or at least to stay the same. They're not going to keep going up because that's less money that a person can borrow, higher payments. It's all based on debt to income ratios and things like that. So just a lot to talk about, a lot to keep our eye on, and that's why we have the show, and that's why we come to you each and every week, and we are grateful and appreciative for that opportunity. But I'm going to take a quick break, come back, and wrap up the show. It's the Fast Talking Your Money with David Hayes. You know, if you've been listening to me for a long time, and I say a long time, we've been here for 20 years, you know that my attitude and the things that I say has probably been a little more transparent in the last few years than it was in the previous 15, 16, 17 years. And so I get on my soapbox a little bit. I take a stance on things, and people like it. You know, I think if you're wishy-washy and you don't have an opinion and you don't take a stance for something, then you're not interesting. So I think people that take a stance for something is more interesting than people that don't. So I try to be very inclusive as far as my thinking goes and understand different ways of thinking. So when I bash, you know, our local government over things, you know, I mean it in a loving way because I just want our area of community to be the greatest community around. I want it to be a place where people, you know, really want to come into. They don't want to get out of. And unfortunately, I've been talking to a lot of people that have been in this county for a long time that are like, man, when my daughter gets out of high school, I'm out of here. Or I ran into some county workers who are like, man, when I get to the rule of 85, I'm out of here and I'm moving to, you know, XYZ. So it's out of love and compassion for our community. It's not because I just like to beat on people's ideas or their thoughts, so forgive me for that. Hey, I hope you enjoyed today's program. You have a little laughter in you, and you learned a little something, and I'll be not back next week because I'll be in Scottsdale, Arizona, so you will have the pleasure of hearing the guys from the office filling in, and I popped that on them just today. So if all goes well, they will be here. If not, I'll have to call my good friend Jim Inman to see if he'll come in. I'll call in from Scottsdale. We'll make this thing happen. Hey, have a great weekend, everyone. Stay warm and go Hoosiers, and wear your suit if you're listening on Thursday night before you get to the game. Put that black suit on and go, and get your little free mask with the Woodson goatee on it. That's going to be a lot of fun. Have a great night, everyone. Goodbye. The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.